This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
TV, Wrestling Network friends and family.
Welcome to this week's episode of your home for everything current, up-to-date, modern-day pro-pugilism. Place Me Nation's main event. I am your co-host, Scott Griscolo. Welcome to the show. 3 weeks in a row. Crazy, right? Although last week technically didn't count. It's not in the canon, if you will. That was, of course, a preview of AEW Revolution. So tonight we will discuss the postmortem of AEW Revolution and look ahead to other fun things. We are podcasting dynasty. We are kind of a podcasting dynasty here at the PTB Wrestling Network. I mean, if you think about it, 13 years of uninterrupted success. I guess we are. Listen to me. I'm such a narcissist. I'm kidding. Welcome to the show, everybody. Let me bring in a guy who's, in my opinion, and I've known him pretty much for all of these 13 years and slightly more, not a narcissist by any stretch of the imagination, Mr. Steve Aloysius Willie.
I'm Joan Collins.
Oh, you bitch. Actually, you're more like Linda Evans, because you're
there the lady.
I'm the fucking bitch. I'm Joan Collins. Although I could be John Forsythe and walk around with hot cougars at 80
there years old.
I mean, fucking hell.
I know Susan Lucci was one, but was Joan Collins one that, like, was screwed out of Emmys forever and ever and ever and then finally won? Or am I just getting her confused with Susan Lucci?
No. Well, Susan Lucci. Well, remember, there's daytime and nighttime Emmys.
Right.
So let's check the.
Yeah, this is stuff I care about. I care about Joan Collins still kicking it at 90.
God bless her. She's probably still hot, too.
Yeah.
1983 probably. Emmy Award. I had friends who weren't. I just clicked the Emmy Awards for 1983, honoring primetime programming. Let's see.
Oh, she was at the Emmys this year.
Well, she was on something lately, or in the last like 5 years, I think. Lead actor in a drama. Well, in 1983, do they do supporting? Oh, they do. Okay. In a drama. Here we go. No, she wasn't on that. Let's see. Oh, that's supporting performance. All right. So Linda Evans was nominated in 1983, but Tyne Daly won for
Tag and Lacey.
Yes.
Let's go.
Let's go. How are the ratings for that for the Bucks and Celtics in the Eastern Conference semifinals in 1984? Oh, such good basketball in the 80s. Wow, Tyne Daly backed. Oh, Joan Collins was nominated in 1984, but Tyne Daly won again. Jesus, I guess they didn't pick
that. Yeah, Kenny and Lacey, that was a show.
It was.
I mean,
show.
I was too young for it, but
that was
like, I remember my parents watching it.
All right, 1985, did she win? No, Betty Thomas won for, no, that's drama. Yeah, Betty Thomas won for Hill Street Blues.
Okay.
You know what? Why don't I go to Joan Collins' page, because I bet she, let's see.
This is what I love, main event.
I know, it's so great.
It's like,
gives a shit about fucking Sting. Sting's not Joan Collins, I'm sorry.
Sting's almost the same age as Joan Collins. I'm pretty sure, there's no joke, I'm pretty sure Sting is closer to Joan Collins than he is to Darby in terms of age.
God.
Yeah, definitely.
She was only nominated once for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama Series, Joan Collins.
And maybe that's what I thought about Joan Collins, that she was screwed out of even getting nominated.
She did win the Golden Chimera Awards, Millennium Award for Dynasty, whatever the fuck that is. She was nominated for 6 straight Golden Globes for Best Actress in a Drama. She won once, 1983. But she never won a Primetime Emmy. She was only nominated once. She did win Outstanding Villainess at the Soap Opera Digest Awards. I want to be a fucking outstanding villainess. Let's see how much Linda Evans won. Who gives a shit about
her? She was in an erotic thriller called The Bitch in 1979.
Yes, that was a, what the fuck is that chick's name? She's the author. My mom reads her books. Oh, shit. The fuck is her name? Danielle Steele.
Okay.
Danielle Steele.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The first movie was called The Dude or The Slut.
Yeah, The Stud, yeah.
The Stud. That's you do realize that's a biopic of Jordan Duncan, right?
Of course.
yeah. The Stud of the Buffet. Anyway, no, I love you, JD. Linda Evans' real last name is Evanstad. She's 9 years younger than Joan Collins, by the way. She's 81. Let's see what she's won.
Let's see.
It doesn't have her awards. Okay, she earned a Golden Globe for Dynasty in 81. She was nominated every year from 82 to 85. She was nominated for Primetime Emmy in 83. She won a People's Choice. Wow. Boy, the Primetime Emmys back then were a bitch, huh? Tyne fucking Daly.
All the good girls got nominated, not the bad girls.
Right. Tyne Daly, huh? She was getting kicked. She was kicking in the teeth. Woof. All right. Sorry, Steve, we can't talk soap opera love the whole night. Although I'd love to. Maybe the no-so could do
Tyne Daly's still alive as well.
Sharon Gless was hotter, though.
Oh, yeah.
Sharon Gless was hotter. Although Tyne Daly was in a Dirty Harry movie. Although Sharon Gless was on the Rockford Files. Anyway.
Cagney and Lacey should come back.
It really should. You would think now in 2024, Cagney and Lacey would be like amazing right now.
It would totally it was a CBS like 10 o'clock.
Oh, it totally was.
Like, drama.
But here's the problem, though, Steve. In the 80s, they made it more realistic. You had Sharon Gless, who was, I mean, she was hot, but I mean, she was pretty, but she was, you know. And then you had Tyne Daly, who was kind of the gritty one. You know that 2024 Cagney and Lacey, they'd both be like fucking smoke shows, and it would be no fucking realism whatsoever.
I mean, well, just have them do it. Or... like Angela Lansbury.
All right. Let's go to Greensboro Sunday night. All right, we have a big show. We have a lot to talk about. This episode seems very AEW centric. Because we have we have to do a postmortem for Revolution on Sunday, which means we have a new pay-per-view. Well, they need more pay-per-views since they have to pay more fucking contracts, apparently. Looking ahead, Dynamite rebranded a little bit. They're still called Dynamite, but they finally made the show look a little sexier since it is the Raw of AEW. That made no sense to me for all these years. We'll get to that in a minute. We are going to do a little preview tonight, Stevie. We will preview tonight, actually. If you're listening to this on Friday morning, tonight, TNA Sacrifice from Windsor, Ontario. They go there a lot. Didn't they do a Bound for Glory there? I think they did.
Yeah, they've been going there quite a bit.
Yeah, I think they did a Bound for Glory there. And then next month will be our next actual pay-per-view, which will be Rebellion from Vegas. So they can do their four pay-per-views in Vegas, and then the other eight are going to be all over the place.
In Windsor and...
I'd like another pay-per-view nearby, because the crowd that I was at in Westchester... with the Doctor and D'Amato and Green for Victory Road was actually very cool.
Actually never been to a TNA event.
Really?
Yeah, it just never lined up with my schedule, and they wouldn't come.
You didn't go to Bound for Glory? What made me?
I was planning on it, but I don't remember what happened.
Oh, I thought you went for Bound for Glory. What was it? Chicago 2 years ago?
I think it was last year.
Was it last year? I could have sworn you went. Okay. I know you went to All Out.
Right.
Okay. Okay. So, quick go through of the results. The Bang Bang Scissor Gang, which I love that name, so great, defeated. A lot of people should call them the total nonstop assholes. Jeff Jarrett, Sodom Singh, Jay Lethal, Willie Mack, Private Party, in a 12. That was on the pre-show. Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale defeated Julia Hart and Sky Blue by pinfall. That was on the pre-show. All right, the main show. Christian Cage kept the TNT belt. He beat Daniel Garcia, but I heard it was a great match. Eddie Kingston, I don't agree with this decision at all. However, I am kind of looking forward to what's coming ahead. But Eddie Kingston did defend his Continental Crown title, the three belts, against Bryan Danielson. Bryan Danielson had to shake his hand, and then they had some backstage back and forth chatting that was on their YouTube channel between Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson. Wardlow won that scramble that was supposed to be like the meat slapper. Then it was the scramble. Wardlow was going to, I think, was going to win either way, to be honest, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And he won that one. So he's got a future AEW world title shot.
Next week.
Friday. What's that?
Next week already.
Seriously?
Yeah. Flush, it's going to be on this big episode of Dynamite they're doing. I think it's next week. It's either next week or the week after.
We'll have to think about that. Roddy Strong, as predicted, is your new international champion. He beat Orange Cassidy. That had to happen.
Yeah.
Blackpool Combat beat FTR. That I didn't see coming. Did you?
I don't remember what I picked. I didn't remember what I picked from last. I feel like I picked this, but I think I picked it because they weren't sure about, like, who knows what's going to happen with Cash Wheeler because he's going to be in court next week.
That is true.
Or next week, next month. It's kind of strange that they were putting over. Oh, we can talk about the card, but yeah, they were putting over Blackpool Combat Club, Moxley and Claudio as a tag team, like starting up as a tag.
Maybe that's why. That's my assumption, I guess. Toni Storm did defeat Deonna Purrazzo. I said it last week. I thought that this match was too soon.
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Was there a schmoz or did he beat her? She beat her clean.
Mariah May, who was dressed as original Toni Storm for the whole match, interfered towards the end. Toni Storm was tapping out to the Venus de Milo, and Luther kind of distracted the ref. And it was pretty lame, basic finish. But the match itself was fun. It's enjoyable. The two of them really fed off each other quite well. And Toni Storm, she's right. My favorite thing in wrestling right now.
She's awesome. She's amazing. I just didn't want to see Deonna have to job so quick.
Yeah. You should have seen the presser afterwards, the media scrum. She did it all in character.
I did see that.
And
I actually saw it. It was on the YouTube channel.
Yeah, like in big business, she's going to fuck up Wendi Richter.
That's funny. Does she always say that? My something's out, my tits are out. Does she always say that?
Chin up, tits chin out, up, and tits watch out for the shoe.
Does she always say that?
She says it once in a while.
And that's her, like, catchphrase? And
it's one of her catchphrases, yes.
And it doesn't get bleeped?
Nope.
Really?
It started with her and Renee. She's so good.
Because I love the term. I mean, I love hearing, you know. What is it again? Something up, tits
chin
out?
Up, tits out, and watch out for the shoe.
I think it's funny because, you know, she's not the most. Toni Storm's one of the very few great wrestlers that are not well endowed. Mm-hmm. So the fact that she says tits out and she's probably an A cup. I'm sorry, never mind. Regardless, she's an awesome wrestler, and that was probably a great match. This match, from what you told me,
holy
was fucking
crap.
Nuclear. Will Ospreay's pay-per-view debut defeated Takeshita. I'll be honest with you, Steve. I knew Will was going to bring a five star. We knew but I'm not the biggest Takeshita fan. I think he's kind of one of those ones that, oh, he's Japanese. He must be a 5-star wrestler. And I think he's maybe a 3.25-star wrestler. But from what you told me, from what Reesh told me, this match was nuclear.
It was, I had very high expectations and it probably exceeded them.
Is it match of the year?
It's not.
At the moment, it's in my top three
right now.
10 months to go. Yeah.
You have Kenny and Ospreay earlier in the year. I love Brian and Zach in Japan because Zach's, like, those are two of my favorite wrestlers ever.
Right.
But and then on Dynamite, he wrestled his buddy Kyle Fletcher, and they had not as good as this, but it was still like a match of the year candidate. He's on another level. And he was like, we can talk after the pay-per-view. We can talk about Dynamite because it felt like kind of a soft reboot with the new look and, you know, kind of calling it the season premiere.
Right.
There are a couple things that I noticed during that show, which led me to believe this is their, well, the big things and small things. But right. Yeah, just instantly mega over the biggest thing on the show,
right?
For both. Well, outside of Sting retiring,
right? Joe kept the title. Knew that was coming. He beat Hangman right. Swerve, and Sting and Darby won. They beat the Bucks in a tornado match, 21-03. I guess from what I heard, the pay-per-view cut off. But
yeah, they have a hard out because it's also on regular pay-per-view.
Right. Now they did show the post thing with Sting yeah. On their YouTube channel.
Yeah, pretty
I
much do.
Immediately. I have to be honest, Steve. I like AEW's YouTube channel. They actually do a very nice job. Another thing I have to say, I do compare WWE's post pay-per-view pressers. Now, AEW does the presser after every pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. WWE only does it after the big ones. They do it after the Rumble. I don't think they're going to do it after Mania. They normally don't. They do it after SummerSlam, and they do it after Survivor Series. AEW does it after every show, but they also have less pay-per-views, so it makes sense. This was the first post pay-per-view presser that they've done that was less than 2 hours.
Oh God,
it was only an hour and 25.
That's
the other problem is here's my problem. WWE Triple H comes out at the beginning, does his talking points. And then, like, the three or four big players of the night come out, talk for about 15 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, 10 or 15, and then they're done. Because I have, you know, they're through my building, my company. So yeah. The girl that I know that does that live, the pressers go maybe 57 minutes, tops.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, and I understand, Tony wants to be nice. I get it. But sometimes you got to draw the line. He stays there the whole thing, you know, holding his cups because he's got that weird tick thing. And literally every single person that was on the show comes up and talks for like 20 minutes.
He'll do
his. It's crazy. This time he either cut back some people or he amped back on the number of people because it was only an hour and according on the YouTube channel, it was only an hour and 25. But honestly, Steve, in the past, theirs are usually like 210 for the presser. That's a little wonky.
Yeah, I generally don't watch them.
I
watched the Big Punk one, like, because I was at the show and he came back and just like turned it on.
And the muffins are delicious.
Like, what is going on here? This one I watched a little bit of I watched the Sting and Darby portion, and the Tony Storm portion. But I watched it after the fact, just kind of fast forwarded the next day.
Mm-hmm. The Sting end was great. Apparently, Sting was the only one that wanted to lose.
Yes, yeah, he wanted to go against the Bucks. He thought getting over the Bucks' new characters because they're like playing up these heel EVPs or just kind of leaning into it. Their move set's almost completely different. The moves that they still do, they've changed the names and completely. They're just douchebags. So it's definitely a character change, and he wanted to get that over, but no one, including the Bucks, were going to let Sting go out on a loss. It's not like the, and I get that for many reasons. Well, you know, everyone loves Sting. That's the one thing over the last week or two that I really didn't realize how beloved he is. Like one of those guys that like nobody has a bad word to say about him. The Bucks refused to win. And Tony didn't want. And yeah, so it was just kind of like everyone agreed that. And it was the right call. Like everyone, no one wanted to see Sting lose at the end of in his retire match in the main event of a pay-per-view. It's a celebration. And he goes out undefeated. And Darby Allin's going to have Darby Allin with one of the craziest spots I've ever seen in my life. I know that he was getting some pushback from it, but I think it was just pushback for the sake of pushback, because dude's literally a stunt person, and they had a stunt person on staff. They brought a stunt person in to help him through it. And I've seen way worse stuff on GCW shows. Pretty much every GCW show I've ever seen, I've seen worse stuff than that on. But it was just a crazy visual to see Allen do that, and then Sting essentially have to take out the Young Bucks on his own. What do you think about, I have feelings about this, what do you think about WWE not letting Luger and DDP be on camera? I didn't care for, and I would say the same thing if AEW did it to WWE. It was like, remember when...
Go ahead, finish.
Like, remember when they did kind of like the Christian and Ric Flair swap between WWE and TNA that one year, where they let Christian go into the TNA Hall of Fame in exchange for like Flair being at the WWE Hall of Fame?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. That was the deal. Flair would cross over to put in the Horsemen, and Christian got to go over. Was it for a DVD, right? You said DVD, right?
It's DVD, or it's like him going in the TNA Hall of Fame or something like that.
Something like that.
Because it's like they showed Magnum TA. They showed like Scotty Riggs. Who else did they show?
Yes, I agree.
And it's not, they didn't do anything. It was just they're in the crowd to watch.
No, I agree with you, because then the Monday on Raw, they acknowledged it.
Yeah.
Michael Cole and McAfee.
And McAfee
said something.
McAfee even admitted he watched the match and said it was epic. And I appreciate that, too.
Triple H is... I mean, look, Triple H is obviously a much nicer guy than Vince is in many ways.
That's a low bar.
Yeah, they really. I mean, Charles Manson might... No, I can't go that far. Vince didn't kill anybody, just their souls. For Luger and DDP, this is different. If you had like an active guy, like if Seth Rollins was in the crowd, I totally get it.
Yeah, I absolutely get that.
But like, really, Luger? Who cares?
No one cares. No one knows he's under some Legends deal or something. No, nobody would care. And if anybody, you know, I'm sure there'd be like 10 people on Twitter being like, "Oh my God, I can't," you know, like something negative about it. But yeah. Really, you're just gonna get. Like, you're going to be put in good graces for doing that. Like I said, with everyone else, they just showed them and like, "Oh, Magnum TA is here watching this," is, you know, "Oh," I can't remember who the other people were there. Oh, you know, like Jim Crockett was on Dynamite before. They actually did something with him. Right. But yeah. Just showed like DDP is here to watch his friend Lex Luger, you know, long time. Flair was involved a little bit in the match, but not too much. Sting's sons got involved, which went back to from a few weeks ago. The Bucks attacked Sting's sons. It was a really fun match, and Darby Allin didn't die, so that was nice. And you know,
that was kind of a mildly dumb fucking spot though.
It brought back especially Sammy Guevara did something similar to Jeff Hardy just a few weeks ago, only Hardy was on a table.
Guevara thing I want to talk to you about after this.
I don't know. Yeah. I think I know where you're coming from.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
I didn't mind it. Like I knew that Darby wanted to do something insane to go out for Sting's match, and then the story was Sting had to take on both Bucks by himself. For you know, till the very end of the match, so I didn't mind it too much. It's one of those things that's going to be replayed over and over and over again,
right?
So, and like I said, he was fine.
And yeah, no, he was
on Everest, like legit.
But here's the one thing that annoys me: why is he being punished by having to be stripped of the tag titles? Now we have to have a tournament.
I don't get it. I think the reason why is because he's going to go climb Mount Everest. Like, he's literally doing that. I think he's, like, in a few weeks. So he's going to do one match with Jay White in 2 weeks on Dynamite, and then he's going to be done. And so they made it seem like he's going to be gone for several months.
Gotcha. All right, that makes sense now. All right, then
so
I
he
feel
had
like
a
that.
Pretty cheerful promo. You know, like there, you know, there is a chance that that could be his final match too. Because what if something happened to him while he was climbing the mountain? And I was like, whoa, Darby, it got dark in a hurry.
Yeah, I know. But all right, so that makes sense now. I didn't even realize that. Where would you put this in the pantheon of AEW pay-per-views, top to bottom?
Top five, for sure. I'd have to go back. I know that Andrew and I did a show about a year ago where we ranked all the AEW pay-per-views. It's probably in the top three. The Revolution ones, and I was talking with Chad and Jordan about this on Monday. Each year, Revolution seems to be like the best show. And Chad's theory, and I like it, is that there's more of a time in between that pay-per-view and the previous pay-per-view. There's a couple months. There's a good like 2-3 months to set up stories. So, true. And the Sting story, that's been known for about 9 months because they set that up. The Paige and Strickland story has been going on for several months at this point. We knew Ospreay's been coming in for a couple months. Danielson, Eddie Kingston story has been going on for quite a long time. The other stuff was a little bit thrown together. But pretty much, this is one of the first, like, few AEW pay-per-views where, and I don't count the pre-show. I don't count that for any, but that's just throwing together matches. You're not having, like, blood feuds on any pre-show. Mm. But with the exception of, like, one or two matches, all of this had built up. Where in the past, there's been matches on a pay-per-view for AEW where they just kind of threw them together in the last week or so.
Right. Speaking of pay-per-views, their other big announcement that night is they're adding a pay-per-view, which now they have to do since they have to pay people. That's why I said at the beginning, and I like the title. It's a pretty good title. Nice call, Tony. I'll give you props for that. AEW Dynasty, which is taking place on the Dallas of ABC. And it's actually the same weekend as a pay-per-view already happening. Because the night before, the 20th, so it's taking place on Sunday night, April 21st, at Chiafetz Arena in St. Louis. That's where, the Billikens Arena.
Chiafetz. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's not not the Blues Arena.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this? Here's another question I've always wanted to ask you. So here's the problem I have. I don't want to say problem. I don't want people thinking it's this tribal. It's not.
With St. Louis? Okay.
No. Well, St. Louis is now where NWA's anniversary is every year, which fucking sucks. Because there's nothing to do in St. Louis except watch the crap Cardinals. And if I ever have to see Yachty or Molina, I might be buried under the fucking arch. Anyway. AEW still picks the smaller venues for the pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. They're not doing it at... I don't know the actual name of the what's where the Blues play.
Yep. They change it every 2 days.
Yeah. They've had like 19 sponsors in the last year or whatever. But like for instance, when they're in Philly, they go to Lyakura Center. That's Temple's camp, Temple's arena. So when is AEW going to start to? Go to like regular venues instead of the littler venues.
Yeah, this is strictly out of guess. This could be my own ignorance, but do you think WWE has rights to some buildings? Like, you know, like they do with Madison Square Garden and such.
Right.
Because in Milwaukee, they've been doing UW Milwaukee, like the former Mecca is where they go. And WWE does Fiserv where the Bucks play, which is really right. Like when they do Raw, that's kind of weird because it's the opposite problem. It's a huge stadium that you're not filling up. Well, now they might fill up because they're doing pretty hot. I don't know. Cause I mean, this pay-per-view like completely sold out, like legit sold out. But some of the, like in St. Louis, I read they had a Dynamite. It was either Dynamite or Collision there recently, and it didn't do well at all. So maybe, my opinion is it's always better to have a completely filled, smaller place than an empty, larger place, because you can get really great sound. Like there's some great old Ring of Honor shows that felt like you were in this huge building and you were shaking the rafters, and it was because it was like 1,000 people crammed into a small space. Mm-hmm. So I've been to a lot of indie events like that. But yeah, like you're one of... Maybe it's with established shows. They're going to do that if Dynasty gets established. Because like Forbidden Door, they do big stadiums. They did United Center. They did the place in Toronto. This one, 16,838, is a pretty dang good crowd. But for, I don't remember where they did World's End.
Long Island.
Long Island, okay. And that wasn't a big...
The old Nassau Coliseum. Where the
yeah, that wasn't a big...
But it's considerably smaller now.
Right. So that was probably 10, 12,000.
I mean, yes. And then they go to Wembley. I get that. Yeah. That's yeah, I get that.
No, I hear what you're saying.
When do you think they'll reach that point? I mean, I don't know. Just an opinion. But
yeah. And I think that's kind of a good point too, with in terms of like tickets and ratings. And with Dynamite starting this kind of reboot on Wednesday, where you have Swerve as one of the faces of the show and actually coming out. One thing I noticed is they have the tunnels back, and for the first time Swerve came out of the babyface entrance.
Right.
So they're like the, you know, it really seemed like he and Ospreay were positioned as the two top babyfaces in the company, which is a huge shift. I mean, Ospreay wasn't even there 2 weeks ago, and Swerve was mostly a heel. And has just kind of naturally come along. And the shift now seems to be for the biggest heels, as like Okada and the Bucks together. With right. Joe as a champion, but Joe's kind of a tweener. He's a heel in storyline, but overall he's kind of a tweener. So with like the high likelihood that Mercedes Moné, Sasha Banks is coming in next week. It is a big shift in presentation. And we won't see for 2, 3, 4 months if ticket sales start going up for the other shows, like your Dynamites, your off-pay-per-views, your Collisions. And then if the ratings have been doing a little better. I mean, this week's ratings were way down, but, you know, sometimes those are outliers. So we'll have to see. Like I hope they the tickets for the big shows are doing great. It's just like when they go, I think Collision really hurt a lot of this, has been my opinion since, I mean, it hurt my own fandom. And I'm pretty much as hardcore of a wrestling fan as you can get. Like you said, we've been doing this for 13 years, right?
Right.
We have to be into it. And I was watching every AEW Dynamite, and then when Collision started, I haven't watched as much. I will tell you one thing, the Dynamite this week and the Revolution pay-per-view definitely got my interest back up in AEW, but will I be watching Collision? Nope. It's too much. There's just too much.
Well, I've said this a billion times on this show over the past few months. Collision was made for Punk. They shouldn't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That was Tony when he had his tail between his legs and he didn't want the Jacksons and the Brooks to be in the same room because he's a big fucking baby and he created a third show. Punk's gone. There's no need for it.
Like Warner wanted a third show. But yeah, that was his way of...
But they should also... But okay, then why don't we finally do a fucking Ring of Honor show?
Right. Oh yeah, I absolutely agree with that.
That's what they need to do. We don't need a third... They have more shows than fucking WWE does. Mind you, WWE shows are longer, but still. Anyway. So that's a show that maybe that's a DVD I buy. Maybe I need to start buying the AEW DVDs.
Hmm. Yeah, wait and get them on sale when they have sales. You can get them for like 15, 20 bucks.
Right. And I think a lot of them are 2 discs. Yep. So anyway, Dynasty is April 21st, the night before a pay-per-view I mentioned a moment ago. TNA is having Rebellion the night before. So that's a big weekend, Mr. Willie, that we'll probably, well, we'll obviously, regardless whether it's a regular week or an off week, we'll do a preview special that week to preview both shows. And I think the following week is the show in France, the WWE show in France.
Oui, hey.
All right.
Man, I love that stuff. I love these overseas shows. Like, well, honestly, it sounded like I was being sarcastic for a second there. Like, I honestly do. That's a change. It's such a change of pace.
If you go back, I want everyone at some point to go back through our archives here at Place to Be, the PTB Wrestling Network. I want you to go back to February of 2014. There is an episode. Oh, geez. Wow. I've been like in Peter Brady mode tonight. If we could change, if you go back to February 2014, go to the episode of the Place to Be podcast. JR and I did a show the day the network launched.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the night after the 2014 Elimination Chamber show. And the network launched. We were originally going to do a vault that night.
I was at that Raw.
If I remember correctly, we were going to do, because the first thing, here's my trivia question. I'm going to ask you in a minute. The first thing I ever watched on the WWE Network was the 2001 Survivor Series.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was what him and I were doing for a vault that night. We decided to change it up and did a show about the network.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So we talked about stuff that, what should they do in the future? We talked about televising house shows. Now that they're going to do pay-per-views, now we don't have to worry about them having to be Sunday nights. They could be any time. And sure enough, now, after almost 10 years, they're finally doing, they did the show in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
They did that MSG show in 2015. Of course, they were all focused on Brock Lesnar.
Not a bad idea.
Making
$12.5 million this year, by the way.
Yeah, pretty much to sit home because he was getting sold chicks. I wonder if that's how much. Never mind, not going there.
Money for nothing, and your chicks for free.
And your chicks for free. Yeah. I just heard that song the other day. Great song. Great album, by the way. Brothers in Arms. You seem like a Dire Straits guy, Steve.
I had the tape. I had the cassette back in the day.
Dire Straits guy. Were you a... What's the band I'm thinking of? It had What's Her Face in it. Oh, shit. Yaz?
Oh.
Yazoo? I don't know. I was Tattoo? Watching a video. Tattoo. Deep Lane! No. so many 80s TV references tonight. It has been amazing. I might go back and listen to that podcast myself, because I'm pretty sure one of the many, many things that JR and I talked about was shows in Europe and overseas, and we didn't really get into other countries. We pretty much stuck with the UK. But now, you know, we have the one in France at the end of April. We got the one in, you know, Germany at the end of August. There is, quote, the, quote, blood money shows in Saudi, but we won't, you know. I mean, the premise is fine. That joke's old, but we get it. So, I think that we're just so wide open now. There's just wrestling everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the point we just have to make that it is overkill. And unfortunately, AEW now has to spend money. So I'm wondering if the point comes where AEW starts to do streaming instead of the pay-per-views. Will they just do it on Max eventually?
I don't, you know, I thought that was going to be something that was announced earlier with, you know, kind of the Warner negotiations, but it really has, you know, nothing's come of it yet. I would do a combo, you know, do some shows like almost like TNA does, right? TNA has their pay-per-views. They have their TNA, their Impact Plus, or whatever it's called now, the TNA Plus shows. I think that would be fine. You do your big shows like your Revolution, your All Out as a pay-per-view, and then you do some of these new shows like Dynasty and World's End, stream them on Max.
Mm-hmm.
Ring of Honor on Max? I don't know.
Right. Gotta do something. Mm-hmm. Gotta do something with Ring of Honor, but we're spanning off to other conversations.
Yeah.
We'll talk more
about they seem to be doing well enough where, like, Dynamite on a weekly basis is the number one show on cable. I don't know if that's, like, there's been also times that they have been number one on the, you know, for network TV as well. You know, Collision is, you know, we knew it wasn't going to be from day one that it wasn't going to be gigantic because of the night. And even more so on the nights where there's like a big sporting event or a WWE pay-per-view on there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, from pay TV to free TV. Well, I guess relatively speaking. Let's go to Wednesday night. This past Wednesday, Dynamite, the night after, they rebranded. Finally, they made Dynamite a little sexier looking, which I've been asking for pretty much since Dynamite started. Dynamite is the Raw of AEW, yet Rampage and Collision have better logos.
Yeah, the logo was the same. They went to that red, white, and blue for a year, but that wasn't much of a change overall, I don't think.
No, the font for the word Dynamite was just boring block letters. I don't know what they were thinking, but now it's like kind of italicized, and I like the colors, and yeah, they do the two tubes like TNA old school used to do. Mm-hmm. I enjoy that. And as you said, we talked about, there's a lot of guys that are leaving at the moment. Hangman Page is gone for a while. Darby Allin will be gone for a while. We still don't have MJF. Now Sting's gone. Not that that matters, but I mean, it matters, but not in the main event.
Right. Set. Omega's, you know.
Kenny's gone still for a while.
Yep.
So obviously, you know, AEW is needing to boost their roster a bit. And now you have, of course, William, who obviously is 2-for-2 in his matches. And then the big one. The Bucks bring out, well, actually, Eddie Kingston comes out when the Bucks cut a promo, acting like EVPs. And yes, as much as it makes me cry, rain was made. And out walks the other KO. And he proceeds to rainmake Eddie Kingston. And he is a heel. Okada is officially an AEW, and he is part of the Elite.
That was,
I actually like that.
Legitimately surprising.
Yeah, but I like that. Because you already have Ospreay as a baby face, so how many fucking faces are you going to have?
Right, exactly. They were in need of heels, strong heels.
And as we've seen in his New Japan Prime, he's a fucking awesome heel.
Oh, yeah. Even when he's a face, like, he can be kind of a...
smarmy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, I was going to go on a rant, and I told you and Reach that today. I was going to lose my shit. Because I'm not a tribalist. I love everybody. But I was quietly rooting for Kei Kokata to join WWE. I think he would have been amazing there. And then I see him walk out Wednesday. Well, it was kind of set in stone a little bit that he was going, but I thought it was kind of a lie. But, or, you know, smoke blowing. Mm-hmm. Then he walked out Wednesday, and I was legitimately pissed. I have to say, Steve, I was legitimate. I was more mad at that than Yamamoto going to the fucking Dodgers after eating Uncle Stevie's sushi. This pissed me off more, actually. But then I saw the numbers. And I saw a tweet that, according to sources,
it's Tokyo Sports.
Tokyo Sports, Okada's deal with AEW is 3 years, almost $14 million
a year. Let's go.
75 billion yen or whatever the fuck their crap currency is.
It's, no, which it's means like 2 billion. It was legit like 2 billion.
2 billion. So Okada, no joke, is making $4.5 million a year in AEW. He's 37. Now, I'm not saying that Tony is not loyal to his roster. I'm not saying that. But we all know, after hearing that, now I understand why he didn't go to the flamethrower. Because Triple H didn't want to give Sasha that kind of money. I mean, she wasn't going to make $4.5 million. That's fucking ridiculous. But she wanted to make, from what we've heard, Steve, she wanted to make the most money on the roster for the Divas. She wanted to make more than Charlotte, who currently is the per annum the highest paid Diva. Women's wrestler, not Diva.
I don't know. Is Becky Lynch? I was just looking this up this morning when we were talking about this.
Well, Becky, I think her deal's up.
Becky's like $3.5 million. I remember seeing that.
That's got to include other shit, though.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that would mean that, like, Roman's making, like, what, $8 million? And that's not happening.
No, I think he actually did.
The difference with WWE deals...
No, he might be making $5 million.
But WWE's contracts include a lot of other crap.
Right.
They get pieces of merchandise. They get... And then they have separate things, the TV, the movies, if they're in stuff. Mm-hmm. Their contracts are different than AEW. I mean, what is Tony giving them? What's Tony giving... Well, what is Tony giving Okada besides money? Nothing. He's got nothing.
Well, yeah, money. Like, I don't know how their PWTs... Because it used to be on the indies, they would get, like... I want to say like $8 a shirt or something like that. That was sold. And I don't know how the merch works with PWTs now, how much they get of that, if they get a percent. And that's what's interesting is that the contracts are probably, the types of contracts are probably way different. So it, and the WWE's contracts are going to be a little bit more public. Or like the ability to be more public because it's a public company. Whereas you don't really hear much about the AEW contracts coming out. Because if Okada's getting that much, you'd have to assume that like Omega, the Bucks, Jericho are making more than that. Because they've been there longer and they also have, you know, the Bucks have Omega. I don't know what Omega does, but a lot of the talent, especially the OG talents, have multiple positions within the company. They have kind of like Triple H does. Triple H has a wrestler contract and he has an executive contract.
Right.
I know, like, even down to, like, I remember when they started, like, Bryce Remsburg, the referee, he had a referee con, and then he also was doing, like, travel arrangements for talent. One of the other guys, you know, like Sean Dean, who's kind of a Ring of Honor guy, like a more of a preliminary type guy, but he also would book all the AEW dark talent. So they have like, you know, multiple contracts. So the WWE contracts, we know more about this, the Okada one coming out probably more because of this Tokyo Sports.
Right.
It is interesting. Yeah, here we go. I finally found it.
Mm-hmm.
All it says is wrestler. This is a Sports Kita, so you have to take that for what it's worth, because Sports Kita is a pretty crappy
website. Yeah, it is.
They're claiming Charlotte Flair makes $600,000. There's no way he's making $600,000. No, it is wrestler salary 2024. Here are some people that are on there. The Undertaker, Stephanie McMahon. Kane's on here. Something tells me that's not right.
No, because Taker's on a Legends deal now.
Right.
Well, Stephanie, I mean, we won't get into that. My point is, here's the thing. I understand that Tony needs to beef this roster up. And every free agent is like a last minute, you know, is a race. Here's the two things that piss me off. I am fucking tired. And if I'm being mildly tribal, I'm trying not to be. But I am so fucking sick of all these, of everybody saying that WWE, well, they're not racist. I'm not going to go that far. But I'm so sick and tired of everybody saying WWE doesn't know how to handle Asian wrestlers. I'm so tired of that. What does that mean? Let's talk about this for a minute, Steve. I need it. You're the only, this is one thing I really love you as a human being on this planet of Earth. You're the only one I could tell this to and actually understand it without thinking a moron. I appreciate that. What the fuck is the deal with, I sound like Seinfeld. What's the deal?
What's the deal?
With what's these Asians? What's the stuff? Women named Dolores. When is that going to stop? Like, did what does Tony do besides win titles for them that makes AEW the better place for European, Asian, or non-North American wrestlers than WWE?
I was thinking, we were talking, you know, earlier today, like, you know, planning out the show and stuff, because we are professionals. And
yes, we are. Like,
I'm totally occasionally a professional.
What a dynasty is.
Yes. I was putting some serious thought into that, because there is that. I think we brought it up earlier, like wrestling is more global than ever. And if you go up and down the rosters of WWE, even New Japan, TNA, AEW, they're like, New Japan's got like guys from Australia, guys from Italy, guys from England, guys from the United States, you know, guys from mm-hmm. Japan, of course. They guys from New Zealand that I can think of. It's a wide variety. And WWE, if you look at them, you got like Scottish, Irish, English, German, Austrian, Japanese, you know, Canadians, Americans, Mexicans. You know, it's like all the way up and down the card. Same with AEW. I think, and I wish Nate was on tonight, because it kind of goes back to what he would say about the five stereotypes of black wrestlers over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if it's that old thought process that people have about wrestling. Oh, the Japanese wrestlers are only this way. And to be fair, for a long time, they had been. And like, I mean, gosh, until like a few months ago, Akira Tozawa was treated like, you know, oh, now he's a ninja. Like, really, Vince? In 2022, 2023? Because that was right. A Vince thing. That was like when Triple H had full control, Tozawa's like with Otis and Chad Gable now. He's a comedy character, but like, if you're looking at WWE in particular, Nakamura over the last year, again, since Triple H came over, and that's like saying that Triple H is like the savior or anything like that, although I should on this show. You know, Asuka and God, why am I blinking on everyone's names? Kairi Sane and Io Sky and Way Damage Control. That's been the major women's story in WWE for the last year plus with that group. So I think it's this old thinking. Now, they have really struggled in NXT with some of the Asian performers that they brought over, and many of them have ended up quitting. Like, I mean, they kind of failed with Kushida. To be fair, Kushida is also, like, I want to say he's like 40, so he doesn't really fit into, you know, young talent coming up. Like, Ho-Ho Loon was a guy that they had. I'm really going to struggle with it because I just don't know NXT. I know they had one of the women left and went back home and is, I don't remember who she's fighting for.
Shit, I don't either. Crap.
Wish luck with bringing up newer Asian talent.
Uh-huh, right.
But, so, and the AEW, it's been more.
Go ahead. Right, but this is what I'm. This is what I'm saying. Like AEW, it just sounds like all whatever will make everybody happy is that the Japanese guys go to AEW and they just win belts and put on 15 star matches. Is that all anybody's asking for? Because WWE could do that.
Yeah. Well, actually, like I think AEW is thinking about it. Like in terms of talent from Japan. It's Okada and Takeshita.
Right.
Those are the guys. They just do the crossover promotions. They do the crossover shows. Well, I think some of the people who are bringing that stuff up, they're just bad faith arguments. And it's just like that arguing just for the sake of arguing.
Mm-hmm.
Like Okada going over. Yes. Like, I thought Okada was going to go to AEW. You had convinced me for a while otherwise. But then you read more and like, I didn't realize how close he was with the Bucks when the Bucks were over there.
Right.
There's just tons of pictures of them hanging out together. So I think a combination of money and friends will go a long way, where I don't think there's really many people that he ever worked with in WWE. I mean, he worked with Nakamura, but he was much younger then. Like AJ, but just for a hot minute. Whereas there's a lot of people like, you know, Ospreay coming over and starting at the same time. Omega. The Bucks. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just more people there. And like when we figured out it's $4.5 million a year, I mean, I there's no way WWE was going to pay that much.
No, because this is what I think. And I'm not saying Tony Khan is disloyal to his roster. I'm not saying that. But WWE is very big on people being loyal. And if they paid Okada $4.5 million, the Seth Rollinses, the Drew McIntyres, those guys are like, well, what the fuck?
Yeah. Well, whereas, and then I would say they should be paying everyone more money.
Right. Well, that's Whereas, honestly, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think the AEW roster gives a fuck, to be honest.
I think their top guys are doing plenty well.
Because if you're MJF, what the fuck are you thinking?
I think they've, redone his contract a couple times at this point for MJF. I think he seems to be pretty darn happy. Like, did you notice how, that 2024 talk completely went away at some point?
Yeah,
the biggest free agent, that completely went away.
Yep. That is true.
I'm just looking at, at Fightful, they have some of the contracts. Omega, Bucks, Moxley, Page, they're all signed Cole through 2027. Same with FTR.
I mean, listen. There's a ton of riches in WWE. That's fine. I know everyone thinks that WWE is, you know, would you cash in Punk for Ospreay and Okada? Yeah. I mean, obviously, in terms of the talent at the moment, AEW looks like they made out. But I agree with you. Will Ospreay would have looked just weird in WWE. He would have just looked weird.
Yeah, I don't think, once you watch the matches from this week, he just wouldn't, he would succeed. He wouldn't be on top. He wouldn't be on top at all. He would have success. He's just too good not to.
Correct.
But, the matches and, the speed and, a little bit of that Japanese style, European style that he brings, where it's mm-hmm. You know, kind of bigger moves at the end of the matches, and he would have to slow down. And he doesn't do flippy stuff really anymore. He does it's more hard hitting. My son came down last night and was watching Dynamite with me, like the main event, and like the chops that Ospreay was throwing. He's like, oh God.
Right.
Like just basic chops. And he put on some, he even said, my son said, like the last time he saw Ospreay was probably last year. And he's like, he got big. He got really big. So
he did look, you know, it's funny you say that, because when I was watching him at the Revolution presser, the post presser, I'm like, wow, was he always this beefy?
No. Oh God. I have a picture of him with me from New Orleans, and he was smaller than me.
Cause he looks, I mean, he's fucking beefy now.
I think he's 225, 230, somewhere around there. Yeah. He put on a good 40 pounds over the last couple of years.
So
and that's helps with, you know, that's one of the, like, he'll occasionally bring out like a huge fly move, but not much.
Right.
But he just goes at, like, somehow he was able to keep that kind of quick speed with it. And he's able to put moves together rapidly, like 3, 4, 5 moves at a time. Whereas that's just not the way WWE works. That's just not their style. Their style is big move, take a break. Big move, take a break. It's just different styles. It's not one's not better than another. I prefer the Ospreay type style that he does now. That's just my preference. It's the other way doesn't suck.
Right. So I guess what. So you think Okada was going to AEW all along, not just because of the money, but because of the Bucks?
My guess is that, and just kind of knowing like a psychology aspect, I think he wasn't 100% sure. I think he definitely tested the waters of both places. But I mean, that's what, if I had two companies coming after me, I'm looking at multiple factors. I'm looking at, hey, do I have friends there? How much money are they giving me? What's the reputation of the company? And like, what are some of the other, like, I don't know, like a living situation. Like, I don't know what the living situation is for Okada. From what I understand, his wife is like semi-famous in Japan. She's like a voice actress.
Yeah.
Like, is she coming?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is she coming over? Is he going back and forth? You know, like what company would let him do what? You know, so I think he probably did his due diligence and weighed both. You know, how much travel, like how much do you have to, how many shows is he going to have to do? Is it going to be like some of the WWE guys and some of the AEW guys that have to be on both shows? AEW doesn't really have house shows. You know, would he be able to do New Japan American shows if he wanted to for AEW? Like WWE, he wouldn't be able to. And so it's all those things that they have to weigh. I know that. That was one of the reasons Ospreay came to AEW, was the ability to live in England part-time as well, and also to be able to still work with New Japan when he wanted to. Those are things I don't think WWE would have allowed him to do as well. Just because there's those precedents.
Nor should I think AEW should have allowed him to do it either. I'm going back to the same thing I say all the time. If you're paying a guy to be with your company and you let him do, quote, favors, and he goes to New Japan, wrestles Naito or something, and blows his fucking knee out, then what the fuck are you going to do? Why doesn't anyone ever think that I'm right on that? Because I'm sorry, I'm right. If you're paying somebody that kind of money to be with your company, he should be wrestling for your company. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. You can't keep having these guys. Oh, you know, you sign with us for $3 million a year. And if you want to go to Progress or you want to go to fucking OVW or not OVW or MLW, or you want to go to fucking CR, what do you call it? Combat Zone, CZW. Or yeah, we're good with that. And then, you know, you get a fucking glass shard in your eyeball. Then well, they're gone for 9 months and you can't work for the company that's actually paying you. So maybe Tony Khan should stop being a nice fucking guy and start acting like a goddamn boss of a wrestling company and start going, listen, I'm paying you I love you, Okada, but I'm paying you $4.5 million to wrestle here. I just don't get it. That's the way it's got to be. I'm sorry. It's not like saying, you know, Steve, you are an amazing wide receiver, and we're going to sign you to play for the Chicago Bears. And Justin Fields is going to throw the ball at you, or maybe he'll throw it over your head. Doesn't matter. He's going to throw the ball to you. But if you want to wrestle, if you want to play football for, you know, the Sandlot League in the, you know, on Wednesdays, I think we're okay with that.
Okay.
No, we're not. It's bullshit. Or Jim McMahon, although Jim McMahon's knees are probably worse than yours, as well as his eyesight. Doesn't he have a glass eye?
Yes.
Wasn't that a rumor?
Yeah, right, I think he does.
Totally doesn't surprise me. But anyway, on a side note, time for a tangent. You know who's one of the most disrespected? I saw this on Twitter. You know one of the most disrespected members of that 85 defense is? Wilbur fucking Marshall.
Oh, yeah. Wilbur Marshall was incredible.
He was a stud. And everyone says he gets disrespected. He's pissed. He hates the Bears because the Bears didn't put him in their Hall of Fame.
That's crazy.
He says he could run circles around Mike Singletary, which I thought was pretty funny. But anyway, I digress. And I know we keep going back to this point, but that aggravates the shit out of me. Oh, I'm going to pay you this. And if you want to go wrestle for other companies, I'm okay with it. You should be okay with it. Stop being a charity, Tony. This isn't a nonprofit.
See, and I think it depends on the person, and it depends on the situation. Like with Danielson, they did two matches, where they let him go over twice. But then also they, you know, you're like exchanging talent, and then they'll, you know, you do like Forbidden Door or have people come over a bit for that. I do know that when Kingston started moving up the card, that especially when he won a title, they stopped allowing him to do outside dates.
Mm-hmm.
Like with, I don't know, like Lance Hoyt just came to mind. Well, what's it, Lance Archer? Like he doesn't get used a lot, so they let him do outside dates to make more money. So I don't know if like some of those guys are like on a per, like do they have yearly contracts, or some of them on just like, you know, per use basis.
Sure.
So like some of those guys I can totally get. Like we, you know, we don't use you that much, so
you know, that's different. If you're talking about a mid card guy or a guy that's not making a ton of money,
like a young person trying to move up, like Sky Blue does a lot of Midwest events.
Right. That is a scenario I get. If AW is not going to use you a lot, and you're making like a per diem deal, I totally get it. But if you're Okada or you're Will or you're one of these guys that is buttering your bread,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, one of those two between now and next year's Revolution will probably be AEW champion, which probably will piss Swerve Strickland off. But the fact remains is if I'm saying to Will Ospreay, sorry, Will, I can't have you go to Japan. I need you. You're being paid to be here now. This is your company now. I can't let you do a favor or two for New Japan. So when you tear your rotator cuff or you tear your fucking quad or you pop your pec muscle or whatever, I can't just go, oh, it's all good. It's fine. Don't worry about it. It's okay that you're gone for 10 months.
It'll be for those two, especially I'm intrigued as to what they will do because some of the reasons that they're for neither of them really has anything left there to prove.
No,
they've wrestled and won everything.
Particularly
like
Okada.
If anything, Jesus Okada Christ. Was like stale.
He was Ric Flair. He was like Ric Flair 1995 by that point.
In fact, that like some of the people were pissed off. Like Tom, it's like I don't know how much of it was shoot or how much of it was just for the show, but people were upset that he didn't put anyone over on the way out. Whereas like Ospreay did.
True.
Ospreay put a couple people over on the way out. So, but there's just, there's really not much for them. So it'll be like a year from now, maybe after the Tokyo Dome show in January, seeing how many times they do go elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Moxley does Sami Callihan's promotion because they're like best buddies. So that's the only one he does.
Well, before then, that, he was doing that. He was fucking. I mean, the worst company to. Well, I shouldn't say the worst. I'm going to get shit for that. I don't give a fuck. But
that's fine.
But the worst thing I mean, he was doing matches in fucking GCW.
Yeah.
Like, where's the common sense, Steve? Yeah. Where's the common sense? If you're he'll probably
do the Bloodsport one, maybe. But that's more just, like, kind of mat wrestling type stuff.
WrestleMania weekend. I get it. One-time thing, WrestleMania. And Forbidden Door doesn't count because Forbidden Door, you're technically wrestling under the guise of AEW.
Right, right.
That doesn't count. I'm saying, you know, you're going to wrestle at Wrestle Kingdom or the G1 or what's the June show? What's the June pay-per-view? The June New Japan show. You know the one I'm talking about.
Dominion.
Thank you. No, that's different. You're wrestling under the umbrella of New Japan Pro Wrestling. I don't care if they're paying you. I'm paying you more. So I'm not as upset personally now because I still love Okada to death. But WWE was not going to give him $4.5 million, nor should they have. WWE is different, obviously, because WWE has more entertainment outlets than AEW does. So even though WWE's contracts don't look as meaty, the Seth Rollinses, the Roman Reigns, the Cody Rhodes, they all can get paid for they all have side deals. I mean, their merchandise deals are probably great because let's be honest, AEW's t-shirts are fucking horrible.
They are. I was so terrible. I don't know if I said this last week, but man, was I upset that they didn't have the Okada shirts available anywhere.
I know. You did say that.
I'm still bummed about it. Yeah. One of his shirts is okay, but yeah, their shirts are terrible.
Their shirts suck. So anyway, I just needed to go on that rant again because now I get it. I understand. But eventually Tony's got to stop glad-handing all these fucking guys and letting them do whatever the fuck they want. And that's why I think right now there is a bit of a morale problem backstage. That's been documented pretty well lately, too. WWE is not going to reward disloyalty, nor do they think that some person walking in deserves to make more or be more than whoever's there now. One thing about Triple H, he is very loyal to the roster there now because they've helped him out both in Now, you got to also think, too, Steve, that a decent hunk of the current WWE roster are NXT.
Yeah.
So they're very loyal to Triple H.
And I've been watching, they're still, with that loyalty aspect. Like, Naomi, she came back in the Rumble, and who was the first one eliminated at the Chamber?
Yep.
Her match and entrance got cut, I believe, this week on Raw almost entirely, and she lost. There still is some of that there. Now, Samoa Joe, who's, not one to talk out of his ass and, make shit up, said that he feels that the locker room in AEW right now is the best that it's been since he's been there. And then, kind of a little kayfabe's like, that's because I'm in charge now. But he was also the one that stopped the Punk and Jack Perry deal as well. So
true.
But yeah, he said that it's the best that it's been for that whole time. And obviously, Punk being gone is part of that. Punk just didn't work there. So, I want the backstage atmosphere to be better. It brings out the best in everyone when you're working as
totally
a team.
Totally does. Totally does. I'm not even saying that to be happy about it. But I think, and I think Tony is doing little by little a little bit better. But I mean, $4.5 million for a guy that's 37 years old. And I love Okada, but if that's what if they needed to overpay to make sure he didn't go to WWE, boy, you overpaid. So what does that mean for someone like a Swerve Strickland? Is he being bumped?
I don't think so. I think he's going to be the champ still.
Do you think Okada or Ospreay will ever be the world champion? Here's my take. Will? Yes. Okada? I don't know.
I think they're going to set Okada up to beat Eddie.
Yes.
Like, I know that's going to be the match, but I think they're going to do that.
That might be the match at Dynasty. They may wrestle that at Dynasty. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But perhaps.
Okada, match between Ospreay and Swerve for the title. That's a pay-per-view main event in my world.
Yeah. Now, is this... Please tell me this isn't true, Steve. I know Tony likes to, you know, whack off to, you know, be in fucking Meltzer matches, but is he going to try to foist an Okada-Kenny match on us?
Kenny just had a health update that just got posted a while ago, and Kenny's not wrestling anytime soon.
No.
Yeah, he just had an interview on Twitch at his Twitch channel. Said he had he had to have an emergency treatment again. They had told him a while back that he was 24 hours away from dying, like possibly dying and getting a blood infection. He said, "Well, explaining to me, I was 24 hours from getting a terrible blood infection and possibly dying. This is like news to me. I've never heard of anything like that. I thought it was like just shrugging it off. I was close to dying. Like, are you kidding me?" So he said, "I don't want to talk out of my ass too much and just say, yeah, for sure, I'm going to be back. I'll be back at a certain day or a certain time because I don't know." And he says, if he can't come back, he feels like he has to. Because, like, after watching Dynamite this week, he was basically just saying he's really enjoying it. But if he can't do it at the best he can, he's not going to do it. He has to have, like, be able to be the highest standards he can. Oh, and think of this. Whether it be on the pay-per-view or on Dynamite or on Raw or SmackDown or NXT or anybody, it makes me want to get back in that ring shape. So I'm doing this weird balance of trying to handle the balance of sickness and the pain, but also trying to make sure things don't get too out of hand. If suddenly I'm healed and I'm cleared, I want to be able to hop back in. The bar is so high, I don't want to come back and be below that bar if I can. I'm just going to try the best I can. So, I mean, that's telling me he's going to be out still a long time.
Mm.
I really like him. He seems like a pretty cool guy.
I am little by little gaining a lot of respect for Kenny.
He's weird.
I always thought he was incredibly weird.
He's incredibly weird, but I also like weird. I mean, it's kind of my career.
I feel like I need to make that a bump.
Yeah, I like weird.
Scott Criscolo, Steve Willey. I like weird. Andrew Riesch. I like weird. Jordan Duncan. Chomp, chomp, chomp. No. I want another hot dog. No. I just hope that Tony's not trying to make his personal, you know, fucking Meltzer match thing or something. I don't know. I think that AEW is in a good place right now. I think they are. I'm sad that Okada's not in WWE, but
yeah, I can understand that.
But I'm glad that Triple H didn't give him $4.5 million because that's outrageous. But I don't think Okada's ever going to be world champion. I think Will be world champion. Obviously, is the plan? Do you think, Steve? And this is a long term chat. We'll talk more about this over, you know, the next several months, because, you know, All In is a ways away.
Mm-hmm.
Are they planning on Will main eventing?
I can definitely see that. I mean, I'm already calling Danielson versus Nigel. I've been calling that for a long time, and I think that will be Danielson's last match for a while, before he goes into semi-retirement.
Is it going to be Will Danielson at Dynasty? Did they glare at each other or something Wednesday?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, they did at the very end. The whole style of Dynamite, like, even like the production and the way the show flowed, and granted, I haven't really watched in the last couple of months, but all of that seemed different as well. I know they hired someone from WWE that came over, but like that was different too. Like, it was just at the very end of the show. It was kind of like, hear me out here. You know, like some of the TNA shows, we watched where all of a sudden it's like, well, like all of a sudden, like fucking Dusty Rhodes comes out of nowhere in the last like minute of the, like, wait, what is he doing here? This at least made sense, but it was different to like just kind of Danielson kind of looks, comes out and eyes him up, goes face to face in the ring. Cause that match has never happened from what I understand. So you've got to do that, especially if Danielson's leaving in a few months. That's kind of been his year, that his arc after he announces, like, he's doing all of these matches that he wants to do. So he's going against random CMLL guys who are technically sound. He's going against some of the New Japan legends. He's having this match with Kingston, Ospreay. And then, like I said, I'm pretty sure if they can do it, it's going to be Nigel at All In.
I can't believe Nigel's going to wrestle again.
He was ready last year, but that clammed Hager Danielson.
Yeah.
Hey, as long as he can do it and like not get hurt, but from what I understand, he could have been wrestling this whole time. He just didn't want to.
Crazy, right? That's crazy. We'll see. Good discussion, Steve.
Yeah.
Glad I had you here, because I needed to. You walked me off the mountain, but I need to keep my emotions in check sometimes. But I needed to hear that, because I needed to get that out.
Awesome.
All right. So let us now. We do have a show this weekend.
There's a show every weekend by now.
I know. It is crazy. I agree with you. I feel like there's always a show. It is TNA Sacrifice. And it is coming up tonight, actually. It is tonight. If you're listening to this on Friday, tonight from St. Clair College in Windsor, Ontario, Canada, where they've done a lot of stuff. Let me see if there's an official. It seats. Oh, that's a college. Oh, wait. Is there, what is it, an arena on the campus?
I don't know. Why doesn't Jordan go to these shows? Like, I believe Windsor is right over the border.
I know, right? It's crazy.
Come on, Jordan.
God, there's got to be good food there. Don't they eat things with gravy? We have 8 matches. You and I were dead wrong, by the way. Or maybe it was all of us, about MK Ultra. We were both totally thinking
I did so bad that on that.
Killer Kelly and Masha Slamovich were going to split up and start doing singles, and instead they win back the TNA World Tag Titles. But they will be defending them tonight against Danny Luna and Jody Threat.
Oh, I'm that not a fan of Jody Threat.
She's okay. I think MK Ultra retains.
Yeah, I've seen Jody Threat on a few indie shows, and I was not impressed. I don't think I've ever seen Danny Luna before.
She's not too bad. She's
she was on NXT.
Yes, she was in NXT UK. She's a UK lady. She's 24 from Croydon. She was she teamed with Mercedes Blaze in a 2-on-1 handicap loss to Jazzy Gabbert. She was on the July 31st episode in 2019. She lost to somebody named Rhea something or other.
Lacey Chabert from Party of Five?
No, Lacey Chabert from every Hallmark movie ever. Alpha, yes. She's now alpha female.
The alpha female Lacey Chabert.
Lacey Chabert. And her tag team partner, Candace Cameron Bure.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that's Danny Luna. So she is teaming with Jody Threat to take on MK Ultra. PCO will be taking on Khan in a rematch. From No Surrender. This is a no DQ match, so that might be mildly more fun. Moose is defending the TNA World title against Eric Young.
Oof. I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah.
That
Eric
feels Young, like it should be like 2018.
I know. Yeah, that one. I think this is just a filler. I'm curious what they'll do at Rebellion.
Yeah.
Jordan Grace, in a triple threat for the Knockouts World title, will take on Tasha Steelz, TNA, NWA alum, and Zaya Brookside.
Another NXT.
Another NXT UK, yes. I think Jordan Grace retains. Yes. This should be a fun match. Time Machine, Chris Sabin, Kushida, and Alex Shelley taking on our X Division champion, Mustafa Ali. Grizzled young vet, Zach Gibson.
Yeah, sign me up for that one.
Yeah, this match might be the match of the night, Steve. Although this one could be fun. Josh Alley in a rematch from Hard to Kill. I think it's a rematch. Josh Alexander and Hammerstone. Hammerstone belongs in WWE.
Yeah. Actually, well, he just signed officially signed with TNA, like full time.
Good. I think he'd be a great world champion. I love Hammerstone. The few times he wrestled in NWA, I'm like, God damn it, he belongs in NWA.
This looks like a beast.
Yeah, he is a beast.
Like he's someone who'd be in the 80s WWE.
Yeah, totally. He kind of reminds me of Kevin Kelly before he was Nails, when he actually looked halfway decent in AWA. ABC will defend the tag titles against The System, Eddie Edwards and Brian Myers. I think they win. Eddie Edwards win. I think The System wins the titles because I think they want to get. The System is like the heel team, heel faction in TNA. So, and then Nick Nemeth, everybody's favorite, taking on Steve Maclin. This has been building since the night after Hard to Kill. So Nick was supposed to be defending his IWGP Global Heavyweight title in this match, but that is now not happening. It is just going to be a straight-up singles match.
Why is that? Is there like a reason given? Or?
Let me take a look. Storylines. Ever since Nick Nemeth debuted at Hard to Kill, he has been targeted by Steve Maclin, with the latter even attacking the former during a match for World Wrestling Council in Puerto Rico. Oh, wow. I didn't know that. On the February 29th Impact, after Maclin won his match, Nemeth appeared on the video wall via a pre-recorded promo in New Japan, challenging him to a match at Sacrifice that was accepted. Maybe it was never meant to be. Maybe he might have just accidentally thought to do that.
That could be. Yeah. That people just assumed.
Yeah. So maybe it wasn't happening anyway. So there's your card. Nick Nemeth for Steve Maclin. ABC against The System for the tag titles. Josh Alexander versus Hammerstone. Time Machine against Mustafa Ali and the Grizzled Young Vets. Jordan Grace defending the Knockouts title in a triple threat against Tasha Steelz and Zaya Brookside. Moose defends the world title against Eric Young. PCO and Khan in a no DQ match. And then MK Ultra defends the Knockouts tag titles against Danny Luna and Jody Threat. I mean, not terrible. I mean, it's... I don't... this the No Surrender card was better than this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for me, like, it's a... I'm not a big Brian Myers and Eddie Edwards fan. I used to like Eddie Edwards a lot.
So did
I. For me, this is like a two-match show with Alexander and Hammerstone and then the six-man. Those would be the matches I'd really be interested in seeing.
Yeah. On a side note, programming note, join Dr. G and I Monday here on the feed. We will have our reaction special for TNA Sacrifice. Him and I will watch the show. We try to give everybody 48 hours. I think that's a good enough window to watch it. And then obviously, if you haven't watched it, spoilers full, so hold off. And then we look ahead to Rebellion, which is, again, the same weekend as Dynasty. Rebellion and Dynasty. It's like the Empire and the Rebellion. That's funny. Dynasty, Rebellion, Rebellion, Dynasty. I think that's pretty funny. Steve, we're going to get to the point where main event may end up becoming weekly.
Yeah, seriously.
Because, you know, we don't like, you know, when we do our off week, like last week was an off week for us, but I now hate not doing a show the weekend leading up to a big show. We have to do it. So we will be off next week. Next week's our off week, and I don't think we have anything next weekend, thank God. We will be back the week after, but on, this is Steve's favorite episode of the year.
Yeah, baby.
Friday, April 5th, will be our Mega WrestleMania Preview Weekend Special, where we dive in to all 458 shows going on in the city of Philadelphia.
Nate, Milton, if you're listening, I'm putting you on blast. We're getting you for that.
Come on, Nathaniel. Can't believe you weren't with, couldn't be with us tonight so you could wax nostalgically over your boy, Mr. Borden. Incidentally, his one kid totally looked like him at 1990 Great American Bash. Totally. The other son, the one that looked like the Wolfpack, not bad. A little skinny. But the son that dressed like 1990 Bash Sting was pretty good. Can't lie. It's pretty impressive. That was cool. I thought that was a good moment. Is there anything else? Was there any New Japan stuff you wanted to
I mean, it's some of it's kind of past, but the New Japan Cups started. They just had their anniversary show. So far, there's been nothing terribly of note except Jack Perry joined the House of Torture, which is like the NWO subgroup that would just attack people with weapons all the time. It's probably my least favorite thing in wrestling right now.
Right.
So, I was a little bummed out about that. So yeah, they just had, they had the second day of it this morning. I watched one match of that and I watched the three matches. Nothing really. Ishii and Chase Owens actually surprisingly had a decent match.
Okay.
Not the biggest Chase Owens fan, but yeah, we'll talk more about it. I've watched like every New Japan show this year.
Mm-hmm.
Not like the multi-man matches, except for the really big shows. But I've just been intrigued. I mentioned last week about all the changes that they have in their own rosters, losing three of their top guys.
Right.
And what it's going to look like and who's on the come up, who's like some of the terrible decisions I think they made, like putting the belts on Nick Nemeth right after you put David Finlay over Ospreay and John Moxley in January. That made no sense to me. So it's very intriguing for me.
I just think the Matt Riddle thing is silly.
I think it is too. I don't mind having him there, but same thing. Like they took the belt off of Zack Sabre, put it on Tanahashi, and then had Matt Riddle come in and beat him within a month. So like, what is it? It's like when you would do like matches at Mania and had someone have the big win and then like you would have them lose at Backlash the next month and be like, well, right. What was the point of doing all that to begin
with? Right, exactly. It was catching lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling you're not going to see that anymore. Cause that was a Vince thing.
Yeah.
That was a Vince thing. Immediate gratification. And then fuck. Well, think about it. Everybody wanted to see Zack Ryder win the IC belt at WrestleMania 32, gets a big win, ladder match, crazy, and then the next night on Raw, he loses to The Miz. You got your 5 minutes, now fuck off, pretty much. You know, it's. But I just feel like we're not going to see that anymore in WWE. I hope not anyway. I don't think there's anything else. I think we're good. All right, nothing else pop into mind. WWE things are... Whoa, hold on. Can't forget this. Two big names announced. The first two names announced for the 2024 WWE Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, the headliner. No fucking surprise, considering where we are. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is WWE Hall of Famer Paul Heyman. Apparently, there's a shirt out already, and it's got all of his accolades. And my favorite one is President and CEO of the Dangerous Alliance.
No, nice. Like to wait.
President and CEO of the Dangerous Alliance. It's so fucking cool. And of course, you know, ECW and all the, you know, the Advocate, the whatever, and all the other nonsense. And then earlier this week, I think it came out today, actually, as we're recording on Thursday. Did you see who else was added, Mr. Williams?
Yeah, Bull Nakano.
Or as of course the Macho Man used to call her, Bull Nakano. I loved her. I loved her.
Yeah.
I was mildly attracted to her. I can't believe it. Hair with the ink and everything. I don't know. There's something about her that was her. And who inducts her? Do we get Alundra? Does
yeah,
does
I think Medusa so.
In?
Yeah,
I she think has Medusa right.
Yeah. Yeah,
gotta find that Egg Dome match. They fucking killed it. They tore that place. They tore that. You remember that match?
Yep.
They tore that. They tore that place to fucking shreds. What was that? October 94? Right?
That's a good question, yeah.
September, October 94? The Egg Dome match? I'm trying to think. Something like that. Anyway. Who inducts Paul?
I've heard people suggest Punk. Which, like, I think is smart to get him...
on camera.
On camera during the weekend.
Right. Someone said Tommy. TNA may loan him out. I don't think they'll care.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, listen, Jordan Grace is in the Rumble. There's something I'm curious about. And totally, we're not going to get into this rabbit hole now. We'll save this maybe for 2 weeks. With Scott D'Amore gone, is that relationship with WWE still good?
What was that? I'm sorry.
What I'd say was, with Scott D'Amore gone, is that WWE-TNA relationship still good?
I don't know. Like, they've just done the Royal Rumble thing. That still bums me out.
What, Scott D'Amore? Totally.
Yeah.
Anthem's screwing the pooch. But we went into that whole thing. We don't want to get into it now, but I was just curious. But I totally think they bring in Medusa to induct Naka Naka No. They have to. Yeah. What else do you induct? Aja Kong? Dump? Who was Dump? Bull and Dump.
Yep.
Gotta love Bull and Dump. Otherwise known as Matt Rotella and Matt Rotella. although, let's see. Maybe it was Matt Rotella and Jordan Duncan. That'd be a pretty good team. Anyway. I know I love Needle and JD. I love them to death. But do some shows, will you? Jesus Christ. Jesus Cristo. I think that about wraps it up. I think we're good. Great show this week, Steve. I've had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Now, let's see how many Emmys Linda Gray won on Dallas. Now, that'll be fascinating. She played a hell of an alcoholic slut. No, I'm just kidding. actually, I'm not kidding. I think she was on Dallas. I know she was an alcoholic on the show. Anyway, check our socials. Obviously, placetobe.podbean.com. Got a great weekend ahead. New episode of the Memphis Continental Wrestling Cast. My man, Luke Jennings. As I mentioned, no PTB weekend special on Sunday morning. There will be a new episode of Wrestling's Chicken Salad, though, Ben Locke and the guys. But join, double check Monday at noon. It should drop at noon because 9 a.m. will be a new episode of Hamburg All-Stars. Monday at noon, again, join myself and the doctor. We will give you our reaction special for TNA Sacrifice. So there will be no PTB weekend special Sunday morning, but there will be a Sacrifice reaction special on Monday morning. So there you go. Steve, anything you want to talk about? Anything you want to plug? You're awesome.
No, not really.
Pot of Honor will be back. Pot of Honor will be back. I promise you. Pot of Honor will be back. Life, Steve, right? Fucking
sucks. Seriously.
God, why do we get a people and things? Ugh, people. Gross. society. What the fuck? Anyway. I hope everyone enjoyed this. Have a great weekend. For Brother Steve, I'm Brother Scott. You've been in the main event. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Extreme.